Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
You know it's training camp when Dan Campbell's doing up-downs, baby. Although if you saw the video, he's missing some of the up part. It's about that time. Football all day, every day here on the Lombardi Line. This show, as always, presented by DraftKings alongside Michael Lombardi. Stormy Bonatoni with you. A jam-packed 2 hours ahead as all 32 teams around the National Football League are on the practice field getting going. Michael, it feels so good. How are we doing today?
And we got celebrity sightings. Hulk Hogan's out there watching practice, coaching up Dan Campbell. Was he taking him off the top rope? I wonder how many ventes they had this morning, the two of them. So, yeah, it's great. It's good to have it. We got hold-ins. We got hold-outs. We got, you know, guys looking sensational with no pads on. We got guys sitting out of practice because they're a little sore. So, yeah, it's a world of everything, Stormy. I love it.
It's the practice reports and over-analyzation of every throw on the field for me. But for as excited as you and I are about training camp, Michael, I don't know if anyone is more excited than the Chargers' new head coach, Jim Harbaugh. Take a listen to his reaction to getting things underway yesterday.
Just the way it feels, I mean, feels like New Year's Day, you know, feels like being born. Feels like coming out of the womb, you know. It's like you're in there and it's comfortable and it's safe. And now you're out, you're born, the lights are on, it's bright, got chaos, people looking at you, people talking at you. And just feels good to, you know, have it happen.
You know what he didn't mention, though, Michael, is that when you come out the womb, you typically cry. So hopefully no crying out there in Los Angeles. What a reaction from Jim, though. That's amazing.
How do you remember any of that? I don't have the faintest memory of any of this. How does he remember it?
Like, unbelievable.
He's reciting it in detail as if he remembers it. Look, it's exciting. I mean, it is like New Year's Day. It's like, okay, we're going to get started. Here we go. We got our resolutions for the year. Life moves on. And I like the fact that the Chargers are wearing that baby blue all the time now, you know? So his analogies are interesting, obviously better than Deshaun Foster's, what he did yesterday at the Big Ten conference. I felt bad for that poor guy. How they ever let him get on stage like that without any help is beyond me, but life goes on, Stormy. Yeah. I keep asking, like, who's paying attention to some of these things? Like, who's helping these coaches out? You know, Harbaugh's pretty resourceful. He could kind of get into, like, talk about some things. But some guys, I mean, you know, Robert Saleh, Deshaun Foster, not so good.
Yeah, they're football guys. They're not podium guys, right? Although Jim Harbaugh is sure something to behold. And so, while there's all this excitement in Los Angeles, another team in California causing me pain, Michael. So in addition to Brandon Ayuk, who reported to camp Tuesday but is holding in, we have another development in 49ers camp. The left tackle, future Hall of Famer, 11-time Pro Bowler Trent Williams is holding out amid some contract struggles of his own. Mm-hmm. Now, he still does have a handful of years remaining on the contract that he signed with the 49ers in 2021, but he's no longer the highest paid guy. The guarantees have run out. So how much of this for you with Trent Williams holding out is him wanting to be the number one top paid guy, considering he's the best left tackle in the entire National Football League? Or is it just that, hey, I need my guaranteed money. Let's make that happen, San Francisco.
Well, I think it's clearly we've said this all through the offseason. This time, the first couple of weeks of training camp is going to be, where's my money?
Yeah.
You know, and Trent, for you, there's nothing to worry about with Trent Williams, though. I'm sure they're going to do something for him. And there's nothing for you to worry about, because do you really want him out there practicing, taking all these reps at his age? I think you want to kind of nurse him along like they're doing Christian McCaffrey, but they got to make sure he's in shape. So that's a good thing. But look, I think this is what we're dealing with today in this free agent market. No one anticipated, including Joe Shane, that the cap was going to go up as much as it went up, which means the players are going to get more money, and they deserve more money. And guys like Trent Williams, who are good players, and they don't have guarantees left on future years, which they're going to be a part of, why not guarantee it? It's what Matthew Stafford was complaining about, and the Rams ended up doing that. So I think it's the right play, you know, and I think they can handle it. So he's there. He understands it. He doesn't need to take reps. The Ayuk one is different because, you know, where are we going with that? You know, I think to me, he keeps turning down offers. you know, Trent Williams hasn't turned down an offer. He wants an offer.
And to your point, too, about him not practicing, it's who wants, especially with a big guy like that, to have a soft tissue injury or anything like that happen in the preseason. So I agree with you from that standpoint. For me, just as a fan and as somebody who wants to see the San Francisco 49ers go the distance, this is such an important season for them in the final year of Brock Purdy's rookie contract. I just don't like all the distractions right now. This team, from a depth perspective, the amount of talent that they're going to have out there on the field, this is the most together and complete version of the 49ers that I can remember in recent history. And I mean, that's why they're favored in every single game this season. This is why they're among the short shots with the Kansas City Chiefs to win a Super Bowl this year, is because they have everything they need to get there. But when you have stuff like this going on, I do worry how much of that might translate onto the field, especially early on in the season.
Yeah, I mean, I think that they got to get locked in. There's no question. You got to get locked into the beginning of the season. But they are good. I mean, there's very few weaknesses on this team when you go through it. You know, I thought today I was working on some things about them, and I thought, they weren't as good at pressure in the passer last year as they were 2 years ago. And that's not true. They're about the same. You know, now I think where they can get better is on third down, and I do think they'll find a way to make a difference in that area. But this is a really well-rounded team that has to avoid injury. And look, I think Brock Purdy can improve. If you look at Brock Purdy's numbers from 2 years ago when he started those six or seven games that he came in to when he started all 16 games last year, when he missed one game, I think to me he shows that he could improve. His accuracy, he can improve, and his timing can improve. And it's just not all play action pass. I mean, that to me is where there's a huge upside to Brock Purdy that we haven't even experienced.
Well, and to that point, there were so many people trying to criticize Brock Purdy that, he's only having success because of all of the weapons around him. All he has to do is get the ball in his playmaker's hands and then they'll take off from there. But let's not forget, he also is one of the top players in the National Football League in air yards per attempt, which is he was pushing the ball downfield, and he's going to continue to do that here. Now, okay, we talk about the distractions that bother me in San Francisco, but another team that is more distractions each and every day, they're on our television screens every day, is the New York Jets. And Aaron Rodgers hit the podium yesterday after getting things started with Jets camp, addressing his mandatory mini camp absence. And apparently, things are going great out there in Jets country. Take a listen.
Obviously, more of an issue outside the building than it was inside the building. Robert and I are great. We had great conversations throughout the offseason. Had a fun one last night in his office till later on. So, it is what it is. I'm an adult. I knew what I was getting into. I knew the fine that was coming, and also knew how much I wanted to be in Egypt. I wish there hadn't been a conflict scheduling-wise, but, was what it was.
What do you think?
It is what it is. I mean, I think, to me, the Jets made it out to something bigger than it was, right? The guy showed up at every OTA day. There had to be a deal. Look, I'm going to show up at every OTA day. But I got this thing in Egypt that I've got to go to. And, you know, maybe Salah said, look, I'm going to have to find you something because you're not here, but go ahead and do it. And you can keep it quiet. He could have had excused absence. I mean, there's a thousand ways to handle it, but I'm just not sure that the Jets always take the path of handling things the right way, i.e. Hassan Riddick. I mean, now people say, well, he made a deal with the Jets, but he reneged on it. No, you don't have a deal with any player until they sign the contract. Hell, we had Rodney Harrison sitting in the Hall of Fame room in Oakland and Alameda, ready to sign a contract. I mean, he was, 6 inches away from putting a pen to paper at the Raiders, and the Patriots were able to get him out of the room and get him to there. We had an agreement with Steve Feldman, his agent. We had a complete agreement, and he left. He left the room because he never signed the contract. So I don't want to hear, well, they had an agreement. I've had an agreement. The guy should be in the Hall of Fame. We had an agreement with him, and it didn't work.
I think with both the Aaron Rodgers and the Hassan Reddick stuff, this is a Robert Saleh and a leadership issue up top with the Jets, the way that they're handling a lot of these things. And listen, it's Super Bowl or bust.
All the time.
It's Super Bowl or bust feeling for this team, which I know sounds crazy to think coming off of a 7-win season, but that's how it is. And that's a complicated place to be for a team that we know is so talented. We know what the defense is, but there are a lot of ifs, as we have addressed a lot on this team. Win total for the New York Jets sitting at 9.5. And high expectations for them in the AFC East as well. Tua Tagovailoa, Michael, apparently is skipping practice today completely, according to CBS's Jonathan Jones. Yesterday, Tua did some individual and 7-on-7 work. He did just 2 team snaps. Yeah. Both were handoffs. And then today didn't practice at all. So maybe the hold-in is shifting a little bit amid his contract negotiation.
Maybe he knows. Well, his agent and Jordan Love's agent are the same firm. I don't know if they're represented by the same person, but it's the same firm. So, you know, maybe he knows what the Love deal is, and he's nowhere near that deal. And so he's going to have to leave. But to me, this is another example of a lack of leadership by Miami. You wonder why they're 4-10 over the last 7 games, the last 2 seasons. I mean, at some point, either you're in or you're out. Right. I mean, the Packers have said they're going to get this thing done within a matter of days. I believe that. But the Tua deal isn't close to getting done. And Jeff Darlington said on Pat McAfee the other day, it may go into the next offseason. And if that's the case, you're either in or you're out. You can't have it both ways. Like, you're going to practice one day, then not practice. Like, who's in charge down there? Who's running the team?
Yeah.
You know, we know who's running the team, the players, because they all complained about Vic Fangio last year, about them being too hard on him. So we know there's a sense of a lack of leadership, but that's what you get with Mike McDaniel. Mike McDaniel's not going to confront anybody. Mike McDaniel's a play caller. He's going to, you know, he's playing Madden. He's really good at doing it, but that, and he's great for the media. But in terms of demanding and keeping a championship team like Andy Reid's done, no, I'm not seeing that.
More questions than answers right now with this Miami team, specifically, obviously, here when it comes to the quarterback situation and his contract. We're going to hit the break. When we come back, we're going to continue going through Michael's biggest questions for each and every team in the NFC. You won't want to miss it. Don't go anywhere. This is VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here's your host, Stormy Bonantoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
If you like watching and listening to VSiN, you'll love all of the betting tools and content at VSiN.com. Each and every day, best bets from all of our show hosts, guests, and analysts available at your convenience. Updated betting splits, exclusive articles, including regular columns from our own Michael Lombardi. And of course, the guides, our NFL betting guide out now. The college football betting guide, remember, dropping a week from today, next Thursday, August 1st. If you haven't already, make sure you head out to VSiN.com.
I love it. I love the music intro, too. I love it. It's so good. It's almost Springsteenish. All right.
Every time
so let's
I hear that music, Michael, I'm like,
topic.
What did I do wrong? What did I do wrong? No, it's good.
No, we want to hear it. Look, we want to hear it. All right. So we know the Packers are in love with Love, and we're expecting a huge deal to come down very shortly. But there is a little bit of a warning that you have for the Green Bay Packers. Please share.
So here's the thing, Michael, and I love that we had a little bit of this discussion about the Jordan Love contract last segment with Mike Somich. For me, I just feel like Jordan Love should not be getting Joe Burrow money. And quite frankly, neither should Trevor Lawrence, who did. Neither should Tua. But as the great philosopher Tua Tagovailoa once said, the market is the market. It's going to happen. So nothing that I say here matters. Let it be known, me saying Jordan Love doesn't deserve Joe Burrow money is not hate. I was a big fan of his coming out of Utah State. He was put in a tough situation, drafted in the first round to a team with a quarterback who wanted weapons, not a replacement. He sat, learned, and now he's getting his opportunity. Had a great attitude the whole way. And he's very talented, of course. But I cannot get away from the Jekyll and Hyde of the sample size we have from him in 18 starts. So let's go through this real quickly, because he's getting paid off of essentially 8 to 10 games where he was awesome. He closed the season 7-3 run, 21 touchdowns, 3 interceptions, 68.7 completion percentage, a 108.2 QBR. Ended up with the second most touchdowns in the entire league thanks to the way he finished the season. Also beat the Cowboys in the playoffs in what was a statement win with all eyes across the country on him. Now, that sample size to me is not fully reflective of who he is as a player. Neither is this. So let's go through the first half of the season. When they were 3-6 and lost to teams like the Raiders, Broncos, and Falcons, he had 4 touchdowns and 10 interceptions. So I'm not saying that's the player he is. I'm not saying the back end of the season is the player he is. But ownership is going to have to pay him based on who he was the last 10 weeks. And I don't think that's fair. Would it be awesome if the Packers front office found the next quarterback in line from Brett Favre, who had three MVPs, from, I mean, multiple MVPs, from Aaron Rodgers, who had four, to now be this next guy that they have for a decade plus, and they win a Super Bowl and they do all these things. Absolutely. That would be unbelievable. But we don't know who Jordan Love is. So why does he get paid as if he's already done those things?
Great commentary. But let me ask one more thing to you. If Jordan Love would have had the second eight games first and the last eight games second, do you think he gets this contract?
No. I think people would have forgotten about it. But because he ended the season performing in the playoffs the way that he did and had that ridiculous run without an interception, I think that the view is recency bias and that he's going to cash in because of it. And good for him. You know, I'm not hating on him. Do your thing.
Yeah.
I just don't think it makes sense.
Yeah, no question. I agree. All right. The Jets, we know they have high, the Ifers, let's call them, have high expectations this season. If. They also have high hopes last year. Are you sure we're not going down the same road again, that nothing has changed in New York?
Yeah, Michael, I know I've said my piece on this team ad nauseum, but the Jets are selling us the same bill of goods. It's crazy right now. It's like they're kind of a used car salesman trying to sell us the same old clunker with a new paint job. And my dad loved his Suburban when he was a kid. Had a VCR, had a TV in it, leather seat. But it was a lemon. It broke down every 2 months. And that's kind of how I view the Jets. Earlier this hour, we played you some sound from Aaron Rodgers on this team's expectations. Let's play that again, along with a Robert Saleh soundbite from last offseason that might ring a bell.
Every single year there's 8 to 12 teams, maybe. Probably less, but 8 to 12 teams that could actually do it. And we're one of those 8 to 12.
32 coaches stand in front of their teams every year, talk about winning a championship, and then realistically there's maybe 6 or 8 teams that have an actual chance to do it. And I do think we are one of those teams.
Am I in the freaking Twilight Zone, Michael? It's the same thing. And and how many wins did they have last year? 7. And I know Aaron Rodgers only played 4 snaps. The offensive line was injured all the time. I get it. But this is, and again, I'll say too, like there are teams that have done it, right? I think about the New England Patriots who had 5 wins and then went on to win the Super Bowl a year later. It can happen. But talk is so cheap. And with this team, it's always talk. I am sick. I am tired. I am sick and tired of the talking from the Jets and Aaron Rodgers and Robert Saleh. Let's just get on the field and do something. No?
No question. All right, let's shift to college football. I can't wait to hear you on this one. Lincoln Riley, third year at USC, got paid a ton of money, has an $18 million home that looks out over the cliffs of the Pacific Ocean. You know, he's everything that they want, and tried to get LSU to not play him this year, said the schedule was too tough already. But LSU said, no, 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 we want you. Why are you skeptical about this SC program coming back and being the juggernaut it once was?
So you're actually going to laugh at me here, Michael, because while I am not a buyer at all on the Jets, something about what's going on at USC might actually be pulling me in this year. But they're another team that needs to prove it, especially defensively. And this is a group that obviously loses Caleb Williams and is going to have to rebuild from that standpoint. But Miller Moss, while not as flashy and talented as Caleb, many believe actually might fit better in Lincoln Riley's system. But what he hasn't done is win anything of significance in the postseason. 2-4 in bowl games as a head coach, 0-3 in the college football playoff. Why is that? Defense is trash. That's why the USC's win total is 7. But I'm actually looking at this from a point of optimism. They bring in Danton Lynn, who we talked about earlier this week as defensive coordinator, who to me could be the missing piece here. Spent 9 years in the NFL. And in addition to bringing a culture and mindset to UCLA last year, also brought significant change on the field. They go defensively from 87th to 11th. They went from 111th in expected points allowed per game to 8th, and also finished the season 8th nationally, allowing just 4.5 yards per play. USC's defenses the last 2 years ranked 106th and 119th. Similar to what we were talking about Mike McDonald with the Seattle Seahawks, I think Danton Lynn could bring that type of change despite the talent that's on that side of the ball. They also bring in Matt Entz from the FCS powerhouse North Dakota State, won 2 national championships with them as a head coach and another 4 as a defensive coordinator. He's linebackers coach and assistant to the head coach. I think he will be another piece that will make a significant difference on that defense. And maybe I'm crazy, but I'm looking at the schedule. They didn't want to play LSU, but they do. And if they win that game, it could set the the tone for a really strong season for this team, who avoids Ohio State and Oregon in the conference this year. I like their win total over 7. There's an alt over 8 wins at plus 350. And maybe, just maybe, this defense could be, and I'm not saying they need to be like a top 10 defense, but if we get top 60, they're winning some games.
No question. All right, you mentioned Oregon. Oregon's been known for high-flying offense since Chip Kelly was there, and they've lived up to that building with Bo Nix moving it up and down the field. How do you think this squad will compare with Dylan Gabriel under center?
I think Oregon's offense could be even better than it was last year, Michael. And I'm not just saying that because they added a marquee analyst and Matt Lombardi to the fold, okay? This is legit. I think this offense is going to be ridiculous. Will Stein comes back for his second year as offensive coordinator. Bo Nix is in the NFL, but they're set up at the quarterback position for the present and the future. Dylan Gabriel is a Heisman Trophy favorite right now. Dante Moore from UCLA was ESPN's number 2 overall recruit in 2023 behind him. Every position that they had a hole on, they filled and made better. They lose Troy Franklin as a wide receiver, bring in a highly touted 5-star transfer out of Texas A&M, Evan Stewart, to play alongside Tez Johnson, who had over 1,000 yards last year and 10 touchdowns. He's looking to break all those records that Franklin set a year ago. They lose their Remington Trophy Award winner at center, but are loaded with NFL caliber talent up front. Top 5 O-line they're going to have with 3 returning starters and both tackles. They're going to have a top 10 running back unit, might have the best wide receiver unit in the country. And not that all of this is a secret, but I think Oregon is a team that not only is going to contend for a Big Ten title, but a national title. This team is the real deal, and they have all of the resources at their disposal.
All right, since Mike knocked the Niners, you believe that we talked to Kyle Shanahan about being shocked Belichick doesn't have a head coaching job, but you still think he'll win a ring this year. Tell me how.
Okay, a little bit of a different thing. Obviously, we played the sound yesterday from Kyle Shanahan about bringing in Bill Belichick. My warning is to Bill. He could have gotten another ring had he come. Like, oh, Michael, imagine what could have been. Imagine what could have been if Bill Belichick was the defensive coordinator for the 49ers. We thought their defense was soft last year. You know who would harden them up? You know who would give them the culture and the words that they need? It's this guy. I am heartbroken. I wish I never would have heard that from Kyle yesterday. Keep that to yourself. I didn't know what potentially could have been. You had the conversation. Bill said no. I wanted to help him get another ring to the case, Michael. He could have had one.
He could have, you know, but he's probably going to try to get another one for sure. You're right about that. But I love the fact that Kyle asked. Isn't that great?
Yes. And I think more coaches should have. We'll be right back.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the sports betting network.
The VSiN NFL Betting Guide is out now, and our all-new college football betting guide drops 1 week from today, coming out Thursday, August 1st. Only VSiN Pro subscribers get all the tools to prep for the college and pro football seasons. Our experts are providing profiles for each and every team with advanced stats, trends, and power ratings, plus, of course, best bets on futures and season win totals. Sign up before the end of July and receive both guides and full VSiN Pro access to our daily pro picks, 24/7 video, and exclusive data like betting splits all the way through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount price of just $175. The football special discount price expires July 31st, so don't wait. Head to vsin.com/subscribe now. That's vsin.com/subscribe.
Disagree with these takes?
No way.
No way.
Or do you approve?
Oh, no doubts. No doubts. No doubt in my mind.
No diggity, no doubt.
It's time to ask Michael Lombardi. No way or no doubt.
All right, Michael, whether it is now, whether it is next season, whenever it happens, Dak Prescott is going to be a very rich man. But my question to you, or no doubt, that's true. Dak Prescott will be a free agent next year. What do you think?
No way. I don't see it. I can't imagine. I can't imagine. The only way that happens is if they believe Trey Lance can be the answer. And I can't believe they believe that. I've talked to people in Dallas, and nobody seems to think that's the case. So I think you know, what'll happen is, like what happens with a lot of teams, they'll bring a new coach in and they'll try to win with another coach, another regime, and try to keep Dak. But again, I said this on the GM Shuffle today, part of what fans don't understand about signing a player or not signing a player or paying Dak is, what does the team around them look? You have to model it out. So what you typically do is, if I pay Dak and his cap number is $60 million, what do I look like for the rest of the team? And I think that's what Jerry's trying to figure out.
If they don't get a deal done, though, because if you're Dak at this point, are you just saying, okay, you guys clearly aren't working as hard as you want to. I'm not even going to answer the phone for you now. Let's go through the season. I'll bet on myself like I have in the past. You can't franchise tag me. I can test the market. Maybe I'll still end up in Dallas, but I can test the market and see what other teams think I'm worth and see what they're willing to pay me.
Right. Yeah, I mean, but typically, you know, quarterbacks never leave, right? I mean, they typically, you know, when you're in a good situation, and look, Dak played his best for Mike McCarthy last year. And there's no question about that. He played his best. I can't imagine him leaving.
Okay. Let's go to Lamar Jackson, who is the defending MVP, two-time winner of the award individually, but nothing quite has happened for him as a team just yet. The playoff record is not good, and he's still in search of his first Super Bowl. No way or no doubt, Lamar Jackson will win a Super Bowl in the next 5 years.
Yeah, I'm going to say no doubt he will. He has to, right? I mean, he's going to break through it. It's not his fault they didn't call any run plays. Look, I think they understand him. They're getting to understand him better and better. For me, I think he will. I have great respect for his talent. I have great respect for his ability. I don't think he shies away from the competition. I think certainly he'll play well in big games, and I expect him to win one.
Third shortest shot on the board to win a Super Bowl in 2025, Baltimore Ravens at 10-1, behind only the Chiefs at 5-1 and the 49ers at 6-1. Now, we talked a lot about the Bucs today, giving them some love on what could be to come on defense. But how about offensively? Let's go to Mike Evans here, who extended his record of 1,000-yard seasons last year with 10. The Bucs wideout is now looking for a similar year and going to pull away and tie and break Jerry Rice's record. No way or no doubt, Mike Evans will break Jerry Rice's record of 1,000-yard seasons. What do you think?
Yeah, no doubt. I think he will. I mean, look, he's got 17 games to do it in. He stays healthy. He's durable. I think if the Bucs can get their offensive line thing squared away, which is always problematic for them, I think he certainly can, because he's still, look, Mike Evans has never beaten you with vertical speed. He's beaten you with power, and power doesn't go out of style.
Speaking of pass catchers, there is a couple that are trying to get new deals done. Obviously, Justin Jefferson secured the bag, but CeeDee Lamb on the horizon. Brandon Ayuk trying to get a new deal. Ja'Marr Chase, although we did see reports that that's unlikely this season. No way or no doubt, Jefferson will remain the highest paid wideout in the NFL this entire season. What do you think?
Oh, I think he will. I think he will, because I think ultimately it's hard to count the deal, right? I think it's really hard to count what it's 32 or 35, and I think he'll stay that way. I really do.
So CD, even if he gets a deal done, you don't think it's going to exceed Jefferson? And I mean, the numbers...
I think it's going to be less than Jefferson, okay. Yeah.
I was going to say, the numbers statistically...
I think the only one who could beat him...
Go ahead.
No, go ahead. You go. If you finish.
I was just saying, the numbers statistically bear out that Jefferson is the better receiver, right? Like, even with the time off that he has made, despite what CD did being the number two guy in the entire league last year, Jefferson's overall numbers are better. But finish your thought.
I just think, for me, I think ultimately, you know, Jefferson, it's hard to beat that number. Tyreek Hill would be the only one who could make the case to beat it.
Oh, and what a segue that is for our next one, Michael, because Tyreek Hill, yes, is trying to get a refigured deal out there in Miami. Tua Tagovailoa also trying to get a contract himself. No way or no doubt Hill gets a deal done with the Dolphins before Tua.
I think there's no doubt he'll get one. I mean, Tua needs him. Tua should be rooting for it. I mean, you take Hill off this team, what's Tua? I mean, really, they'll double Waddle, and then where's the ball going? Tua's going to be holding it. He'll get hit. But look, Hill is the guy. Hill's the guy. Everybody in the league knows it.
So what do you think the number is going to be? Do you have a guess?
I think he's going to get, they'll probably guarantee next year, and he'll probably add some money to it, you know, keep us I would say probably put him right up there with Jefferson.
Okay. While we're talking contracts, if Tua, whether or not Tua gets his done, doesn't matter. We know Jordan Love is going to, and we have heard repeatedly that it was going to be done prior to training camp. We're at training camp. It's not done yet. We hear from Adam Schefter. It's going to get done by the end of the week, potentially, and he could be the highest paid player in NFL history. What does Michael Lombardi think? No way or no doubt, Jordan Love will be the highest paid QB in NFL history with his deal.
No doubt. I mean, look, Adam doesn't get it wrong, and the Packers are more than willing to play. The fact that the Packers are willing to let him roam around the field and not do anything, I think they'll definitely get it done, and I think it'll happen sooner rather than later. I think there's no question that by the weekend he'll be the highest paid. Now, again, like you said in your storm warning, it doesn't make it right. It just makes it.
Expectations for Jordan Love and the Packers this year, Michael. Like, how far do you think Jordan Love could take it, given the schedule and the division with which they play in?
I mean, they're really, when you go through the numbers, Stormy, they're good. I mean, the problem is their run defense has been so poor, right? Last year, they gave up four games of over 100 yards rushing, 200 yards rushing. They've got to do better. And for me, I think they can. But right now, you know, I think that's Jeff Hafley. But offensively, the third best offensive line in football in terms of pass protection. If Jacobs is healthy, why can't he be a good player? I mean, for me, I think it's really got a great opportunity. It's right in front of them.
Are you just saying that because Big Daddy Vince is listening? Is that what's happening here, or do we really believe it?
No, Big Daddy Vince doesn't think they're going to win anything. Big Daddy Vince has got a big job today. He's going to put together the stand for the pizza oven. Let's just get him focused on that more than anything. We got to get him on that.
Well done. Send pictures. We got to put those bad boys on the air.
I'll send you pictures, yes.
There we go. One more quarterback I want to talk about. Matt Stafford, currently four-year, $160 million deal, runs through the 2026 season. Head coach Sean McVay confirmed his contract has been restructured, but noted he did not receive an extension. No way or no doubt, Stafford, 36 years old, will play the remaining years of his contract.
No way. I don't see him holding up. I just can't see that he can. Look, I have great respect for him. I think he's been, you know, a great player, and he's tougher than hell. But I think one of the reasons why it's been difficult to get a contract for him is because he's, you know, they're worried about his elbow. And, you know, this off, I think they're going to run the ball a lot more. I mean, last year they were 2-7 when they only scored 21 points. I mean, they need to slow the game down. They need to run it, and they need to maximize their ability to control the football to help their defense a little bit, who's going to be obviously missing Aaron Donald.
If Stafford stays healthy this year, no way or no doubt, Rams are a playoff team.
No doubt. Yeah, I think they are. They're well coached. I think they will be, yes.
Okay. I hope so, because I bet that. So I needed a little bit of confirmation. That's okay, Michael. We have Mike Palm coming up next here on the Lombardi Line. So I'll end on this note, because obviously Circa Million, Circa Survivor are going to be a really hot topic. No way or no doubt, Michael, Stormy Bond and Tony can contend in Circa Survivor this year. What are you thinking? Can we get more positive vibes out there?
No doubt. No doubt she can contend. I mean, you've got everything you need, you know, experience, ingenuity, creativity, you know, the guts to make a tough call. Those are the important things to have.
My
you know,
guy.
If you're going to go with everybody else, you're going to lose.
Can always count on you. Excited to talk a little Circus Survivor, see where things stand right now in July with Mike Palm as he joins us for the final half hour of the program. Stick around. Lots more to come here on the Lombardi Line.
This is the Lombardi Line with former NFL executive Michael Lombardi. Now here is your host, Stormy Bonatoni, on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Pressing? Yes, I say it's pressing.
This is Palms Pressing 3.
Now my mother told me never to answer a question with a question.
Sir, my client has answered every question asked by this committee with the utmost sincerity.
All right, Mike Palm, let's do it. Palms Pressing 3.
Okay, Michael, question number one. There is no disputing that the NFL is king. King amongst the American sports, and it also drives a large and significant part of our economy. But is there anything in your mind that threatens to knock the NFL off the throne? And I'm going to give you a list of choices. You can say one of them, multiple, or none of the above. But here are things that I think that peck away at the reign of the NFL. The proliferation of games being taken out of the country, the saturation of playing games almost every day of the week, the eradication of physical play through penalization, the transition of local ownership to hedge fund companies, gambling suspensions, contract hold-ins, and the cost of NFL TV packages on multiple networks. Anything have a shot to derail this? What's the most serious concern in your mind?
Well, I think anytime you get corporations involved and hedge funds come in and you eliminate the mom and pop operation and you go to, you know, all these compliance things, that certainly could throw a wrench into it. But none of the other ones. I thought you were going to mention concussion protocol, which has always been Malcolm Gladwell 5 years ago went on his podcast and said that, you know, most of these football stadiums in the next 50 years will look like the Colosseum in Rome empty. You know, I don't know where he came up with that, but that's what he came up with. I listen to his podcast, Revisionist History, all the time. And so I thought when I was walking, I almost fell down when I listened to that. I do think concussions and serious injuries are going to play a factor, and the owners are going to have to make sure that this enormous pie of wealth gets shared with the people that have made this game so great.
Well, and I don't know, like when you look at the broadcast, right, of the last year, how many of the top 100 were NFL games of live broadcasts that were watched? It was like 96 of the 100 were all NFL games. It's hard to imagine something knocking off the league in the near future.
Mike, Michael, question number two. I've been catching up on Receiver. Both Femi and Stormy told me this Netflix show is very good, and it's certainly better than the quarterback one last year. No, that's not a specific comment about the quarterbacks. But something really caught my attention, and it was Amon-Ra St. Brown talking about his injury after week three against the Falcons. He said he sustained a serious rib injury. He couldn't walk and almost couldn't breathe. Yet that entire week, he was never listed on the injury report. In light of that, Michael, I want to ask you, how transparent are teams in actually reporting injuries? And do you think that the Lions will get fined in light of this revelation?
Oh, I think they should get seriously fined, and teams do get fined. I mean, this is an absolute complete violation of the integrity of the game. I think they've got to come down hard on the Lions. Look, if a guy is out there, he's not at practice, and you don't have to tell him how severe it is because obviously he played. So if they listed him at probable and he played, I get that. But you don't have to tell the extent of it. But if they didn't have him on the injury report at all, then it's a huge problem.
So I completely agree with all of that in general. But is this something that, Michael, in your experience is normal? Like, is that something that you've had happen on teams to where things haven't been revealed? Like, is that normal operating procedure and practices behind the scenes with teams?
I think the way they've cracked down the last few years, Stormy, they've been more diligent about this, and teams have overloaded their injury report to where it's excess. They don't want to be caught with someone who doesn't play not on the list. Now, where the fudge element comes into play is, you know, you list a guy as probable or you list a guy as doubtful and you know he's going to play. Those things are kind of always in question, but to not have the guy on the list when you know he's got ribs, you know he's having trouble breathing, you know he really can't run, and there's nothing you could do for him. It isn't like you could say, oh, we're going to do this, we're going to do that. No, you can't. You know, that's a pain tolerance thing that you've got to get through.
You know, the NFL is lauded as having the best injury reporting policy, right? We grouse about hockey with the upper body, lower body, no details. The NBA, you don't know who's starting till 10 minutes before the game.
Probable actually means doubtful if it's Giannis Antetokounmpo and vice versa.
Baseball, they're out 10 or 60. So I think it gets heightened, the scrutiny on this, because of the partnerships with sports gambling, though. Because this not only affects the integrity of the game and competition within the league, but also can skew it from a betting perspective when you're covering up injuries and people don't have access to who's going to play. All right, third question, Michael, one of our favorite guys, Lamar Jackson, the COVID kid, back in the headlines again. He comes back to practice with the Ravens, only practices for an hour. Reports of people there at the practice say he walked off the field wearily. There were some reports that he was sick, but Todd Monken said he was 100% fine at the start of practice. Is there any cause for concern with Lamar Jackson only practicing for 1 hour?
Yeah, well, I think obviously he's got some kind of bug and you've got to worry about it, right? I think there's no question that that's got to be a worrisome. Why is he out there? And if he's 100% and then he gets sick, is there something? Does he have a neurological problem? Does he have Meniere's disease? Is he getting off balance? I mean, who knows? I mean, but there's a reason he walked off the field. I think you have to take that in as a serious thing. But fortunately, it's only July and there's plenty of time. Mike, I wanted to ask you a pressing question since you brought up Baltimore. What was Justin Tucker's numbers outside of 50 yards last year?
I know he had an off year for his standards. You got it in front of you, Michael?
Right in front of me. They're 1-5 outside of 50. Which to me is, you know, we both agree he belongs in the Hall of Fame and he sometimes belongs in the MVP conversation. But my question is, do we think he could be slipping?
Well, it's very possible. And usually for a kicker, it's not a gradual slope. It comes off from a plateau and goes down. So I guess that's an area of concern in handicapping, and it's something that I really didn't think about, but I've taken an anti-Baltimore stance this year. But, I mean, I've given the proliferation of reasons why I think the Bengals are going to win that division. I think Baltimore loses. Like you said, Michael, they have guys waiting to play, but they still have to prove themselves. I think they lose a lot on the defensive side from the coordinator going to Seattle, and then a guy who's never called plays before. I mean, that's one thing to be young and be seven years out of the league, but you've never called plays at any level before. That's a steep learning curve, especially early in the year. Obviously, they get a number one schedule. The Bengals had a winning record and get a number four schedule. So the Bengals have a big advantage in that respect. I think the Bengals played the best single game of the NFL regular season last year when they went to Stormy's 49ers and I think convincingly beat them in that game when they were fully healthy. And then the other thing is, I still think there will be lingering effects of the way Baltimore lost the AFC Championship game, getting down one score and completely abandoning their identity as a running team, having Lamar Jackson throw the ball 20 yards down the field on 2nd and 4 and 3rd and 4. I mean, Reed and the Chiefs came out and said it. We knew they couldn't come back in the second half. We were just running the clock out. They totally lost their way. I don't know how they get their way back immediately. So those are the factors why I'm against.
Not even considering Tucker. Mike, they panicked. And I agree. See, I think what happens is all these guys that have gotten jobs, I think everybody focuses on the game plan. No. The game plan's easy. It's Monday through Friday. You got plenty of time. Where this shows up is on Sunday at 1 o'clock when stuff starts happening really quick. What do we do? How do we handle it? How do we fix it? Is Gerard Mayo going to handle that? I mean, I don't know. I mean, that's a hard thing to do. It's not easy. It's a little bit like, okay, Brian Callahan's taking over for Mike Vrabel. Mike Vrabel was really good at game management. He was really good at understanding situations. Brian Callahan's going to be calling the offense. Now, let's not forget, when they didn't have Joe Burrow, this offense was 29th in the league trying to run that three-receiver set out of spread without a quarterback. Not good. But now you got to manage the game, too. That's a hard thing to do.
Your guy, Bill Walsh, was famous for his first 25 plays or his script and the Shanahans as well. But the adjustments at halftime, and I mean, the final drive to go, what was it, 13 plays before the catch against that Dallas defense to really vault them in was not part of a script. Yep. It was part of an adjustment.
Right. And people lose sight of that. That's where Zach Orr, is he going to be able to adjust like Mike McDonald? That's why Anthony Weaver, is he going to adjust like Vic Fangio down there? You know, that's why some of these new offensive, can they adjust? Bobby Babbage, now he's got Sean McDermott to help him, but there's concerns about that. You just can't all of a sudden say, oh, well, we're going to be fine. No, it's hard. It's hard. It's fast and furious. You better do it right.
Another great Palms Pressing. This was fun. Fun show today, everybody. Thank you so much for Michael Lombardi, Mike Palm, Mike Somich, who joined us earlier. That's a wrap for us today on the Lombardi Line. But stick around. Plenty more VSiN and DraftKings Network coming up after this. Bye, everybody.